Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Welcome to Salon Talks. I'm Mary Elizabeth Williams, and your next big read is here. Jennifer Weiner's Mrs. Everybody is in stores now. It is the story of two sisters, Jo and Bethy, for those of you who may have read some Louisa May Alcott in your life, coming of age during the women's liberation movement, spanning all the way to the future.
Mm-hmm.
But not in a science fiction way.
No.
It's the story of love, family, from the internationally best-selling author of 12 previous novels and a lot of other stuff too, including mm-hmm. Good in Bed, In Her Shoes, Little Earthquakes, as well as the memoir Hungry Heart. That was the last time I talked to
that
you.
That was it.
For Hungry
yeah,
Heart.
But that was just on the phone.
Yeah,
you
this
didn't
is,
get me in all
I didn't
of my
get,
like dressed-up glory.
And the eye, and the eyelashes.
Right?
The eyelashes.
Well, if you go to Lash Bash in Philadelphia on Sansom Street and have a couple $100, they can be your lashes too.
All right.
People are like, are they yours? And I'm like, I paid for
yeah,
them.
I so bought them, so yeah.
They're now they are.
So now they're mine, at
now
least for
mine.
A while. They're gorgeous.
Thank you.
Nice.
Thank
good,
you.
Good eyelash
Good
game.
Investment.
Yes, absolutely. So let's also talk about the book. What do you say? We didn't do a little bit about the book, too?
Oh, fine.
Okay. This book, Jen, it's so amazing. It is big. It mm-hmm. is sweeping. Mm-hmm. It is ambitious
yeah.
AF.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to me because your last two, when I talked to you 3 years ago, you had just done a children's book.
Yeah.
You had done a memoir.
Yeah.
This is a very different kind of book for
this
you, too.
Yes.
This is historical.
Yeah, uh-huh.
What made you try this?
It's so interesting. Okay, so here, the story of where Mrs. Everything came from. I wanted, after the 2016 election, when I think a lot of fiction people and novelists, and especially those of us whose fiction tends to be on the more fun and entertaining side, were doing a kind of gut check and saying, like, all right, like, what am I called to do at this moment in time? And I wanted to write a big dystopian thriller about a future where abortion was illegal and where birth control was illegal. I wanted to write Red Clocks. If you've read Leni Zumas's book, Red Clocks, which is that, basically, it's this dystopian, you know, women can't have fertility treatments, women can't get birth control, women can't have abortions. And I tried and I tried and I tried and I tried and I just could not make it work. I am not Margaret Atwood as much as I would love to be Margaret Atwood. And so then I'm sort of sitting here thinking, what am I going to do now? And I'd always wanted to write a historical novel. Susan Isaacs is one of my all-time favorite writers, and one of her favorite books of mine is Almost Paradise, which does the same kind of thing as Mrs. Everything. It takes on generations, and you go back and you see people's grandparents and people's parents and how they were sort of formed in the crucible of expectations and limits. And I wanted to do that. And then there was a voice inside that said, is that book big enough? It's just another sister story. And I had to tell that voice to shut up, because I had to really like argue with myself and remind myself that the personal is political and that women's stories can be big stories, even though we are not taught to think of them that way. And I just had to get over my fear of doing all the research, which was like no joke, but I finally like gathered up my courage and went to the library, and here we are.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because it is so traditionally that stories about war are stories,
yes.
and stories about, you know, men things are stories, but stories about family
right.
are
domestic.
Right. They're little,
women's
they're
fiction.
Small. It's yes.
Chick lit.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
a story, if it's a story about women, then it's not interesting to everyone.
And you have to package it so carefully. Like I was talking in my reading last night, like this topic came up, and I was talking about Meg Wolitzer's books and how carefully those covers are designed to make sure that there's like, there's not a woman, there's not a beach, there's not a flower, there's not a, you know, there's no sort of Eiffel Tower with a beautifully dressed woman photographed from behind in the mists. Like those covers are like
the subtext of those covers is, men, you can read this and be okay. And
you will not be embarrassed. You will not be embarrassed.
You will not get your period. It will all be fine. There are women in the book, but don't worry. Don't worry. We've made it safe for you. And I hope that men read Mrs. Everything. Like, I really, really do. But as you can see, there are women on the cover.
But you might have to, it's abstract enough.
Exactly.
I thought that, like, maybe.
The men can think they're just shapes. Just shapes. Just circles and swoopies and, you know, shapes.
Doesn't necessarily have to be ladies,
oh,
right?
I mean, right.
You think about this.
I mean, right?
Of course
like,
I do.
When you think about, like, I mean, my 16-year-old, the grumpy one who hates me, came to my reading the other night, and she's like, "Ah, it was a room full of middle-aged white ladies." And I said, right? And I said, okay, A, what do you think I am? I said, B, what do you think you are going to be? And then I was like, Lucy, who do you think reads any book, right? Women, you know, not all white women, but Black women are enormous consumers of fiction, but women are the readers. And we read books by women, we read books by men, we read all the books. And nobody has to do like any sort of special arranging to like signal to us that like Dave Eggers is okay or John Cheever is okay. Like we just, you know, we read men in school and we were taught that that was literature with a capital L. And so we read books by men. Men did not grow up reading books by women in school and believing that that was literature. And I think that for a lot of men, it's like, oh, it's all romance, or it's all fluff, or it's not for me. And I think that's really unfortunate. I think men are missing great stories.
Yeah, they absolutely are, because it's just about the human condition, mm-hmm. and about family, and mm-hmm. about relationships, and about the dynamics. Mm-hmm. And this is also about a 70-year period.
Yes, yes.
In American history.
Yes.
It would not be a it's not a bad thing.
No.
To know about what went down,
what
in,
went
this,
down.
In this period. So
yes.
I want to talk to you about that, mm-hmm. because you are a former journalist.
I am.
And reading this, I could feel you. I could feel mm-hmm. you doing the work.
Yeah.
Jennifer.
Yeah.
Even to the little, like, when I got to 2003 and someone has a BlackBerry,
uh-huh.
and someone is on the Zone diet,
right.
I was like, mwah.
Yeah,
like
right.
that is, you
right.
you went back in time, even to 2003.
Well, it was, some of it I could remember. Like, I remember, well, I had my BlackBerry a lot longer than most people. I like just gave it up. Like, I didn't want to use an iPhone because the typing was hard, and the typing still is. I have like really huge thumbs, but you know, they're enormous, but there are pieces I could remember, like obviously the pieces that I lived through. Like I remember the 90s pretty well. I remember the 80s-ish. I barely remember the 70s when I was a kid. You know, the 60s, the 50s, like that was where I really had to like dive into the magazines and the newspapers and the classified ads, which were like always the most interesting part of the newspaper. And I wanted to get the details right. Like I wanted to really like make you feel like you were there, like you could feel that shag carpet under your feet, or you could taste the new Coke in the 80s or like whatever it was.
The Jell-O.
The Jell-O.
The Jell-O comes up a lot in this
yes,
book.
Yes, I know. I don't think Jell-O is going to have me be like their brand ambassador anytime
not,
soon.
Not because
sorry,
of what
Jell-O. Sorry about it.
Spoiler, Jell-O meets a bad end.
Yeah, Jell-O gets flung in unfortunate places.
But it's those kinds of little details that make it very real. And also learning about, it's very clear, like just even the little moments of this is what the experience of being an African-American veteran,
yes.
of the Vietnam War would be like.
Right.
Things that, again, guess what, men? There are men in this book.
There are men like, in this book. Perhaps we should have put one on the cover.
Maybe that was the,
we
maybe,
something
like really
phallic,
big, like
something
just
thrusting,
a big
pointed,
penis right on the cover.
Pointed,
maybe that would,
yes.
We'll see if that would work.
That,
the symbol.
It
we could try. Maybe for the paperback. Just think about it, Jennifer.
You never know.
But this is also, this is a book about history, mm-hmm. and about the work that you've done researching it, but it's also really personal.
Yes.
And as someone who talked to you about your last book,
mm-hmm.
there is a very crucial element mm-hmm. in this book that is drawn from your family.
From my family. So the story of my family is that my parents both grew up in Detroit in middle-class Jewish families. They both went to the University of Michigan. They met and they got married, and my dad became a doctor. And they moved to Connecticut, and they had four kids, and they lived in the suburbs. And my dad left in the 80s, just kind of decided he was done being a father and being a husband, and left. and my mom was a single mom for 10 years with, you know, teenagers and young adults and all of us sort of trying to get our lives started. And then in her mid-50s, fell in love with a woman. And we were all shocked, and like none of us had seen this coming. And so I remember like being on a conference call with my siblings and be like, did you know? Did you have any idea? And like, you know, well, she played softball, and you know, that's a stereotype. But you know, so my mom, her first girlfriend was this much younger woman who was closer to my age than my mom's, which like added this whole other layer of like awkward weirdness to it. And then they broke up, and then my mom met Claire, who's been her partner for the last 16 years. And I mean, my mother would tell me when I was growing up, like I would complain about things, and she would say, it's all material. So when I grew up and like used that material in fiction, you know, and sort of had characters like complaining about their like, gay mom, you know, she was okay with that. But like, I started, as I got older, and as my daughters got older, and as I started to think about what her life must have really been like, and what it must be like when there's a part of you that you can't share, that there's this secret you're always keeping, there's something you know about yourself that you can't be open to the world about, and how that shapes your life. And I wanted to write about that because I'm interested in women's stories and women's secrets and sort of the way we are in public versus the way we are in private, the way we are with men versus the way we are with friends or family or sisters. And I wanted to do a more thorough and respectful telling of my mom's story. And so that's where Mrs. Everything, that was where it was born.
And this character. And this is... I just want to run through it, because when mm-hmm. you talk about the secrets that women carry, mm-hmm. and we talk about where we are now at this moment in history, which right. is not great.
Hashtag believe her.
Hashtag not great, not also. Great. And yet, these characters, through multiple generations, go through, I'm gonna list it,
oh boy.
A couple of them.
Uh-huh.
Molestation,
yep.
rape,
mm-hmm.
illegal abortion.
I promise there's funny stuff
it's,
too.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Jell-O.
Yes, Jell-O.
Right. Being closeted.
Being closeted.
Having an interracial romance.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Down through like being a sugar daddy,
yep.
you know,
mm-hmm.
going on a sugar daddy,
yep.
being sexually harassed and abused in the workplace.
In the workplace, being judged for not wanting kids.
Being judged for not wanting kids,
mm-hmm.
weight,
yep.
being shamed for your size,
yep.
for having the audacity to put on weight.
Yep.
All of these things that women do go through, and
right.
do, so, and not just women, but especially women, go through and suffer through in quiet. And
yeah.
in times past, there was no back and forth. There
right.
was no conversation.
Right.
And this book is a conversation about that.
That's what I'm hoping. And I'll tell you, so there's two sisters in Mrs. Everything. There's Jo and Bethy. And Jo, as in Little Women, she's the rebel, she's the tomboy, she wants to be a writer, she wants to live in a city, she wants to have a big life. And as in Little Women, ends up married to a guy who sort of sniffs at her writerly ambitions and ends up as a mother for a while. My Jo, I was able to give a different ending to. But so then there's Bethy, who's the good girl, right? And Bethy in Little Women is the sister who dies. And I'm sorry if I just spoiled Little Women for anyone who hasn't read it yet.
But you've had like 200
yeah,
years.
So come on, catch up. So Bethy, you know, she's the pretty, you know, suffers in noble silence sister. And then when she dies, it's this like moment of heartbreak for this family. But she's like, you know, don't weep for me. So I wanted to take a good girl, right? And I wanted to talk about what the world does to good girls. So here's my Bethy, who is shiny as a new penny, and she's bright, and she loves to perform, and she loves to be the center of attention, and she's Queen Esther in the Purim play. And then there's this uncle. And what happens with Bethy and the uncle, I am discovering, has happened with a lot of women. Like I did one like video chat with a group of readers about this book like a couple weeks ago, and I was like, you know, and then this terrible thing happens to Bethy, and right down the screen scrolled, that happened to me, that happened to my sister, that happened to my best friend, that happened to my partner. Like just boom, 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 boom. And I was just like, God, I so wanted to believe that I was making this up. And of course I know what happens, but boy, it happens a lot.
And everything, every single thing that we've just talked about affects everybody.
Affects everybody.
Every single person in the world mm-hmm. has or knows someone who's been sexually abused, mm-hmm. who has been sexually assaulted, who has had an abortion.
Had an abortion, right. And with Bethy's story, I wanted to show the importance of language, because she doesn't have the words really to even tell anybody what's going on. Like she can't say, he's molesting me. Like she doesn't know that word, and or abusing me even. And all she can come up with is, was like, you know, he's hugging me too long. And her mother, who is a widow now, who's supporting this family, who's out in the workplace, who is enjoying her life in the workplace and probably feeling like guilty and conflicted about that, is like, what do you mean he's hugging you too long? And Bethy ends up confiding in her sister, and Joe is the one who sort of takes care of business on her behalf. But I was, as I was writing the book, you know, and as I was sort of like putting Bethy through like the, it felt a little like Perils of Pauline-ish. It was like one thing after another, and I had to be careful that it wasn't like too much. But I wanted readers to think about the importance of naming things, like how once you've got a term for something or a word for something or language for something, that's when you can start to solve it. That's when you can start to fix it. And so as we move forward and we think about the gains we've made and perhaps the ground we're losing, I wanted people to think about the importance of naming things and speaking out loudly and telling our stories bravely and knowing that our stories matter in the world.
Mr. Rogers, quote, mm-hmm. what is mentionable mm-hmm. is manageable.
Yep, yep,
it's
yep.
that simple. So yep. speaking of telling our stories, mm-hmm. you know we want to get into this.
Mm-hmm.
Past 9 years.
Uh-huh.
The past 9 years, because yes. I've been on this journey.
Yes, yes, yes.
Uh-huh. You have been speaking out.
Yes.
In a very bold, brave, to the point of being really...
savaged.
Really savaged.
Savaged.
For this.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the sexism in the literary world.
Right.
In the way that women's stories are written about, mm-hmm. in the way that women's literature is talked about,
right.
in the way that women in general,
right.
as a group or
right.
a demographic,
right.
are talked about.
Right.
Now, when you started having this conversation,
mm-hmm.
you were pilloried
oh, yeah.
for it.
Mm-hmm.
I watched that stuff go down uh-huh. on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
And now, here
mm-hmm.
we are.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Mm-hmm.
And can we just say, you were right. You were right
well,
about a lot of this
mm-hmm.
stuff. And you have in this book, without giving anything away,
mm-hmm.
you take on,
mm-hmm.
in a pretty explicit way,
mm-hmm.
some of that hypocrisy.
Right.
What does it feel like? What does it feel like now to look around and see that there has been this reckoning?
There has been this reckoning. I mean, again, this goes back to naming a problem and being able to point at something and say, yes, this is real. Like when I started talking about it and Jodi Picoult started talking about it and saying women's books are not reviewed as often, and we were told we were lying. We were told we were jealous. We were told we were just making it all up. We were told we were hysterical. We were told that our books are crap, and that's why no one reviews them. And then someone started counting. And the organization VITA every year does its count, and they discovered that lo and behold, there was a true discrepancy. And they started calling editors, and then reporters started calling editors and saying, hey, New Republic, you reviewed 17 books by men and one book by a woman. What do you have to say for yourself? Or, hey, Paris Review, you published short stories by 75% men last year. What's up with that? And
also discovering
mm-hmm.
the rot
mm-hmm.
that was actually going on behind the scenes
well,
at some of these publications.
I was going to say that, like, you know, some of the biggest offenders have been have been me too'd, as we say in my house, and are no longer, you know, at the head of these organizations. But I think that there's been a shift. I think that there are women at the helm of some of these publications, which makes an enormous difference. I think that a lot of editors have tried to do the right thing, have said, yes, we know there's a problem here, we are trying to address it. And even the editors who haven't said that, they get called on the carpet. And if they say, we review the best books, and if the best books are by men, we will continue to review books that are just by men, people say, well, let's talk about your criteria. Like, what is best to you? How are you defining it? Who's defining it? Who's on your staff? Let's take a look at that masthead. And I've seen real progress. And for me personally, you know, to see this book called Ambitious, and to see people call it a great American novel, and to see people say, like, this book has something to say and it speaks to readers, I mean, for me, that's just tremendously gratifying and rewarding. And I don't want to, like, you know, do a big victory dance or anything, because it's not fixed yet. It's not all better yet. But are we moving forward? Yes, I think we are.
And in a way that is, you know, I love this book because it is at a moment when there is so much despair and hopelessness.
Yeah.
This is a book that looks at that.
Yep.
But is also ultimately joyful and hopeful.
Joyful
and funny.
And hopeful
and yes, sexy.
Sexy, yes. And I mean, super entertaining, because that's my job at the end of the day. Like, I don't want to write polemics. I don't want people feeling like they've just spent 400 pages watching me stand on a soapbox and yell at them about reproductive rights, even though I want to do that sometimes. And yeah, there's some pretty sexy sex scenes, which were pretty, I mean, honest to God, like, when I gave the book to my mom, I was just like, she was at my house for Passover, so I, like, give her the advanced reader's copy, and I'm sitting there watching her read it, and I'm thinking, oh God, please leave, please just go, like, just get in the car before you get to the sex scene, because, like, I don't want to sit here and watch you, like, read about, like, two teenage girls in a vibrator. I just do not.
And that's why you have good boundaries, Jennifer.
Yeah. Thank you. Boundaries.
Boundaries, always important. In
boundaries.
Work, in home, anything. The book, again, is called Mrs. Everything.
Yes.
It is.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
Fun.
It's fun. Even men will like it.
Even men should read this. Yes. Put it in your beach bag, fellas.
Jennifer, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you. This was fantastic.
Hey, Central Ohio. The Nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. CODA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist CODA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the Nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at CODA.com. That's CODA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.